Hello and welcome to another edition of Turn Atta Punk Footnotes. I'm one of your hosts, Damien Abraham, and your other host, as always, is my friend and your friend too, Chris O'Toole. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing A-okay. Tell me about the fun times you had this past weekend, my friend. You went and saw... You don't have to get into what the party was for, but you went and saw some bands play this weekend.
Yes, I did. I saw a lovely group called Uncontrollable Urge, who are sort of regionally in our area. Good band, offshoot sort of the TV Freaks band, which is also another band I recommend people check out. But another group that played was one I shouted out on our last year-end sort of thing, which is they're called Tommy and the Commies, who are excellent. And so I got to finally see them perform their excellent new LP called Here Come, which also, I believe, I spoke to one of them about, and this will interest you and some people like us, I should say. I believe they said they had Tim Warren get it mastered,
which impressed
me greatly. Yeah. So, and it sounds great, but I don't know if that's, you know, I had a very, very, very brief discussion with one of them about it, and I just was like very impressed that that was mentioned. So anyway, great band, check them out. But yeah, it was a good show.
Awesome. I did not get to any shows this week. I'm getting ready for a tour.
Yeah,
so I was home kind of like running around. Actually, I went away with my brother and Holden, my eldest, and so, you know, didn't get a chance to do too much concert going myself, but I did get a chance to read up on, I'm gonna say, out of any top 10 list this year, any lists of the best things this year, the most well-researched ones, and those are yourselves, Chris.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. It was it's a labor of love. Yeah.
This was like a lot of people will throw together their top 10 list, you know, and there's some people that will put a little bit of work into it. Chris, you put in like, I'm going to say a good 2 weeks worth of work into this thing.
Yeah, that's true. It was. One person I definitely want to shout out, though, because I do feel is another person like myself is, of course, part of our lovely show family. Mr. Dave Martin also does an excellent job. And I definitely worked off of his some of the things that he had put out there, mm-hmm. Which are excellent. And I recommend if people have seen his stuff to go check it out. But yeah,
Dave Martin's stuff. And I think Dave Martin probably the best taste in music out of anyone I know, like, you know, for rock music.
Yeah.
But Chris, his list did not have, you know, some of the things that your list have, which I found incredibly fascinating to read about or to remember on and think back about, like from shoes to rap beefs to things I didn't understand involving people wearing soccer jerseys. You know, it was a wide ranging list.
Well, yeah. So I guess to give context here, so I do this sort of just for myself. I've done it for a very, very long time. I do like a year end sort of recap. What started happening in recent years was when I didn't have a lot of time, actually, in the last few years up until present, I would just kind of recollect things that happened over the year. So it wasn't always, at first it was always just music. Mm-hmm. And then I would think like, well, no, this kind of awesome thing happened. So I just want to put that on the list too. And then it snowballed. So I kind of do a general culture list, so to speak, of good things that happened. And then I do sort of a really, really thorough music investigation. And with zero exaggeration, I listen to, I don't know, not counting what I listened to through the year already that happened to be released during the year. But I would say over the last 2 weeks, it was something like, I don't know, 150 things, mm-hmm. I would say, mm-hmm. which you wouldn't think sounds like a great amount, but actually is when you really give it the full time to kind of sit and listen to it.
Like, would you give it the full time? Was there shit that you were just like, oh, fuck this time. There's no way I'm getting through this whole thing.
Some. When I knew I didn't like it outright and I knew it wouldn't serve my purposes, but no, I didn't do that a lot, though. It was only probably, honestly, a handful of records at most. Like less than five, no joke. And I full played everything else.
What's the worst thing you heard this year?
The worst thing, well, I don't know, I want to throw a lot of shade because, you know, whatever, it's, I'm trying to be respectful. But a record I did not like, which is not for me, was this record by TV Smith. I'm going to pull it up right now. Called Land of the Overdose, I think it's called.
Wait, really, TV Smith from like...
Yes, yes, that TV Smith. Advert? Yes, oh. And I did not enjoy that record. But, you know, again, it's not for me. It's just, you know... But that was one of the ones, if I had to like, that really just did not sit with me. I think it's called Land of the Overdose. The lyrics are excellent, though. That's the ironic part. The lyrics are really excellent on the record. I just really didn't like the record at all. And it is,
have
yeah.
Have you heard Baby Shark, Chris?
No, I didn't hear that. No.
Okay, well, guess what, buddy? There's my worst one for the year. When you have well, kids, yeah, like, there's I'm a whole sure, new like, bottom.
Yes. I'm not saying this again. Like, that's not meant to like, you know, isolate. That was just one of the ones that really didn't agree with me. Like what I would do, my process was I would scour a lot of general lists of things, especially even people like Dave Martin, like real heads out there. And then I have my radar and some stuff. So I just collect it all, go through it all, try to do it by genre, even if possible. And then, yeah, but there was just some things. And when they were on lists and whatnot and they really didn't hit with me, I was kind of shocked, and it was very, very rare, but that was the one that jumped out at me. Again, all due respect, not trying to be a dick, just not my thing.
It's weird because I didn't see the Terry Funk record at number one. Was it number two and I just missed it, I guess?
No, you missed it. Didn't make my list, although I love that made yours.
Completely yeah, valid I do list, but, you know.
I do have, though, I do want to, if you will oblige me.
Yes.
I did do a more thorough punk investigation, so I felt like the stuff I shouted out last time, if you wouldn't mind, we go into just briefly.
Oh, totally.
So let me just call it up here. But like, yeah, so when we last did the best ofs, there was certainly things that were on my radar then, but I did catch some stuff that I missed that I really felt was quite good, and I would like to give a shout out here. I'm just trying to call it up if I can find the bloody thing. But yeah, so I was able to kind of sit down and do a more thorough thing. One of the records, as you mentioned on the bumper of, I can't remember what episode, last episode maybe.
No, it was on the Danger Aaron episode.
Or Danger Aaron one, yeah, sorry. Was the Special Interest Spiraling is excellent. That was one of those records I missed last year, sort of in the mix. But it's great. It's not sort of like an atypical punk record. It definitely has elements that are more like artsy or even... you know, slightly, I don't know, electronic's the wrong word, but not dancey, but not electronic, if you get my drift.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love that.
It's a great record. Stigmatism Demo, I shouted out, Wasteman. Yeah, so the Shit record, I really got to give more time to.
Yeah, it's I forgot what, that one too. That's also
yeah, fantastic album. It's called What Do You Stand For? And I think Damien and I have, because we're, you know, close to this, the people you tend to like, you know, sadly take that for granted. That's a really, really strong LP, I think. Yeah. And I had it really high up. Highly recommended for people that like that sort of stuff. Another one that caught me was this band Lysol. They have a single called Teenage Trance, and I can't remember what the B-side is, but anyway, it's on Neck Chop. It's fantastic, kind of like sleazy, aggro sort of stuff. Public Acid, Easy Weapons is in like an indie release that's like kind of like big in people's worlds for the year, it seemed, and that was also excellent. Total Rager. That one you shouted out, I finally got to check out on Static Shock, that Idiota Civizato. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Civizato?
Yeah, it's great. That's a great record as well.
Highly recommend. Sick, that thing.
Another one, I think this band's from Sweden. I'm not 100%, but anyway, it's a self-titled 7-inch from this band called Profoss. Profoss. It's on Adult Crash. Fantastic record. And again, another Rager.
That's a great label, too. They put a lot of good shit.
Yeah, totally. I shouted out the Vile Gash record. That's great. Warthog was also great. Rick yeah, and the
Warthog
Pigs.
Warthog record's fucking incredible.
It is. That band is great, like, period. They're, but yeah, Rick and the Pigs, I also put on, it's a collection called The Child's Gator on Total Punk. Fantastic. It's like a cross between like the Penetrators and like the Dictators, and like, it's fantastic. That band is so good. I cannot recommend them enough. You weren't, I don't think, directly involved, but that Raise Your Voice Joyce comp is unreal.
It's unreal. Well, I'm not involved in it at all.
Yeah, that is real for people that, you know, these are records, like, these are ones that are, yeah. There's a band called Condor.
Bastia?
Okay.
It's the second band or the third band on the Razor Voice.
Oh, on the comp. Sorry. Yeah.
It's fucking amazing. Not Bastia, because that's the Italian band, or the Italian only band, right?
Yeah. I'll tell you.
It's fucking incredible, that song.
It's a really, really great compilation. I realize like it seems like silly maybe for Damien to be, but Damien's not on it. So
I'm not on it at all. I had nothing to do with it. Like this to me is like, I don't know. Like this is one of those things where I am so glad I'm not involved in it, even in any capacity. Like, you know, like I really did like that David's Town compilation.
Yeah, it's great. That's also great.
So, but because I was on it, I could never say that. But this time I have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, even though I did have the worst song on the David's Town comp, like I couldn't.
Not at all. Well, I don't know offhand, but you're silly.
But I did write some lyrics for some other songs, but that was
this comp though. That comp is excellent, and this Raise Your Voice Joyce is excellent. Oh,
it's better. It's so fucking insane. And that like, it's obviously the songwriters involved, and then it was Jonah kind of going there and working with everyone and just kind of putting this thing together. Yeah, but fuck, that thing rips.
Yeah, so huge credit to those involved. I really enjoyed it. Again, I knew I would like it, but I threw it on and it's, you know, it beat out some records that I had to like put it ahead of because that was so strong. Mm-hmm. There's a band from France called Condor who has like a cassette single. It's just self-titled. You can find it on YouTube. And then another big one to shout out is this group called Gen Pop who released a 7-inch called 2 on Feel It. Mm-hmm. And it's excellent. So that's the top picks, but there were some other good ones like the Physique LP on Iron Lung is great. Of course, I showed up more. Wound Man's another one. That's one you got to hear, Dame. There's a group called Wound Man also on Iron Lung. It's a record called Prehistory, and it's like total modern power violence, like legitimate. It's really, really strong.
That was awesome.
Yeah, and what else did I shout out here? I think this is how it's pronounced. Toscos, Tozcos, and it's Suenos Des. I don't know. I can't speak Spanish, but Deceptivos.
Okay.
Anyhow, that's a great record too, and that about covers it.
Awesome. Well, it's been that's the thing is when you actually get into it and go in and listen to these records, there's still like unbelievable punk and hardcore records coming out.
Yeah, totally.
That Turnstile LP. Which I didn't really, I don't think I showed it on the show.
You did. Yeah, you did.
Did I show that one on the show?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. The Nothing LP, did I say that one on the show?
I don't know. No, that was the one you might not have, but that is good.
Yeah, it is really good. There's just so much stuff coming out that, you know, that I'm into, you know, that I'm into, that I'm feeling into. You're feeling it.
Yeah, I didn't mean to divert this too much. I just wanted to make sure to get all that out for the people that are like footnotes aficionados. That'll be food for them.
Also, like, because this, you know, artist became one of the most popular artists in the world this year. But have you listened to much Juice WRLD, Chris?
No, I'm aware of the name, though.
There's like a song he's got, which I swear to God, it's like, it's got to be influenced by Blink-182.
Okay.
Like just the vocal pattern. It's like I can almost picture Tom DeLonge singing it.
Gotcha.
He can go too. Like I watched a freestyle that was like super fucking long that he did on a radio show. Like I don't know, maybe it was like 30 minutes. Maybe longer. Wow. So it you know, but yeah, definitely influenced by Tom DeLonge.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So am I in some way. So aren't we all?
I don't know if I am, all due respect, but yes.
I know you're a Boxcar Racer fan, Chris.
Yeah, definitely not. It's
starting to sound like that Blink-155 podcast now. So
yeah, it's never been my thing, but, you know, do you.
You never saw me? You never went to any of those Blink-182 shows?
No, I think we've covered this on the show before, but no. I never had any of those records, never was into that band. I do have a good friend that is massively into all that, though, so I am aware of it.
Well, that's a careful way of disguising your true fandom. Anyway, we've got to talk about some... I guess, like, you know, minorly tragic news and some majorly tragic news. So, I don't know. What should we dive into first? I guess we should build our way up. I guess earlier this week, it was announced that Maxim Rock and Roll, the venerable punk institution that, God, put all of our bands on, Chris, like put everyone that came out of punk's band on first.
True. Yep.
They're shuttering their physical production, which is a sign of the times. A lot of people have done it. We've seen it happen to tons of magazines in this era. I think Maxim Rock and Roll was one of the last that people thought it would happen to, though.
Yeah, I think so. That seems to be the general consensus. I think there was a lot of people that, you know, were very surprised. I think because it had held out so much longer. Like, there was a lot of other magazines of that similar ilk that did shutter a while ago when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Even stuff like Punk Planet and anything like that, like Flipside, that all ended. Did any of that really go even to much into the 2000s?
No, like Punk Planet, that Shred magazine. Fuck, what was Jeff Bale's one that he did afterwards that was actually really sick, that did the black metal article?
I cannot remember. Even Heart Attack ended.
Hitlist, too.
Hitlist, yeah. Heart Attack ended what, like 2005 or 6?
Well, I was going to say, like, all these things are like kind of like blips compared to Maxim Rock and Roll. With the exception of maybe Flipside, which did die way before Maxim Rock and Roll did. But Maxim Rock and Roll, I guess, like extends on to either side of all of these.
Yes, absolutely. Which is, I think, why people who are surprised are as surprised as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think it seemed like it would continue to at least be the mainstay in respect to the fact that it had been the standard, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just largely, if I had to guess, just a victim to, you know, any kind of time, like modern times. I'm not sure if the print thing is as lucrative as it ever was. Not that they really ran it for a huge profit, I would imagine, but
no, I think it was deliberately run not for profit, right?
Yeah, like, so point being, though, that you need to obviously not be losing money on it, so who knows how that needed to pan out.
I guess it's important to also say that it is going to go on in sort of its web incarnation, and
yeah, absolutely
a source for like a ridiculous archive, like,
yeah. They're still doing, they had mentioned something in the release of it. I saw that they're still doing, like, the archive project is still ongoing and what have you. So it's not gone. It's mm-hmm. just in the physical form. It is not being produced from what I understand.
Yeah. Which is, you know, a shame. I guess they haven't put up records since that comp.
I don't even know what was.
That public safety comp, was it called?
Mid-2000s. Yeah, that sounds for really, was that late? I remember, like, obviously I know the old ones, but the what year did that? Now that you say that, I forgot they did a kind of modern quote unquote one. I'm just gonna see here in our lovely resource. Maybe you'll be quicker than me since you seem to be more astute at navigating it. But yeah, you and I had both visited them in person, the headquarters. So I feel, I feel privileged to have done that there.
Yeah. Sorry. No, it was an unbelievable privilege to get to go there. Like, you know, I got to meet Bruce Rohrs. I got to, you know, like, look at that library, look at that amazing archive that they had.
Yeah. The library is, it's actually like fully intimidating. It's so, so thorough or what have you. Yeah, you're right. 2006, this comp came out. I just found it.
Was it called the Public Safety comp?
Yeah, it is called Public Safety. You're dead on. And I do remember this now, but it's got stuff like Formaldehyde Junkies, Frampted, Strung Up, No Hope for the Kids, Regulations, Liberist. Yeah, very much a sign of the times.
Mm-hmm.
Look Back and Laugh, of course, The Observers, Gorilla Angrib, First Steps even on here. Wow. Crew Suicide. Okay. Maybe that's why. I think they got copies at the time or something. So yeah.
I think they got copies. I remember that happening actually.
Yeah. 2006 though it came out.
And I guess they did a reissue. Oh, and they did a Bumcon CD.
I don't know. The only thing, like, I remember this comp now that you mentioned, but I don't remember much newer than that.
They did a cassette comp in 2016, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Noise Ordinance comp that came out in 2011.
And 25th, they had something to do with this Los Crudos comp thing I'm seeing here.
Maybe yeah, they did put that out for a second. No.
They put it out in the U.S.
Oh, crazy. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I did not know that either.
So they've had it's been a few years, but since they did
the comp. It's, when you look, it's only been a record like 2012, 2014, 2015, 2016. So it's been a few years and there was only one sort of a year for a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's again, this is not to, you know, suggest that things aren't rolling. It's just that, you know, that it has not gone at the same pace. Mm-hmm. But yeah, great. It's a bummer, but I just think it's sort of the unfortunately where print media is, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's the reality. It's print media is unfortunately not something that, you know, it's easy to make a go of it these days. But my gosh, like what a label! Sorry, I'm going to just back through the early releases.
Yes, of course.
First of all, that first compilation is amazing, but like Deserter, it like that second comp that they did, the Turnaround comp, with, like Corrupted Morals and Sweet Baby Jesus. And
like, I think it's so, I still think it's wild that they did that Deserter. It's such a great LP.
Yeah. I definitely don't own this Turnaround comp. And now that I'm looking at Rabid Lassie's on it, I gotta fucking get this.
You're speaking of the Turnaround comp, double 7-inch from 87, for listeners who aren't aware. But yeah.
Yeah, with Operation Ivy, Sticky.
Crimshine, Dame's Faves.
That's like, man,
what an amazing. And the most important group, Yeasty Girls, of course.
Absolutely. But they also did the Underground at a Poland Deserter record,
which is amazing.
Absolutely essential.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a pretty expensive record these days. Well, not as bad as I thought.
Yeah, well worth it, though.
Well worth it. And then also they did that, the Naive record.
I don't know where that is. I'm not. Oh, yeah, sorry, from 90. Yeah.
Which is a Russian punk band.
Huh. Switchblade. I don't know. Is that supposed to be Knife? K-N-A-I-F-E?
I guess.
I don't know.
Maybe it's Russian for Knife.
But, yeah.
But, yeah, great label. Great label. Amazing that definitely, you know, I owe a huge debt to. And I think everyone out of punk ultimately does. Because it was the first place that, you know, a lot of us got exposed to punk, you know, got our band's names out there. You know, learn how to tour from Book Your Own Fucking Life.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's an institution. But yeah, I guess the march of time goes on, and unfortunately, physical format, it's becoming more and more the refuge for the old.
Yes, people like us.
Well, it's funny because, like, I guess Max Rock and Roll kept evolving, right? Like, if it had stayed like a nostalgic magazine, like, which I guess kind of Flipside did, and maybe that's why Flipside didn't survive.
Yeah, there's obviously some other magazines that have that sort of nostalgic appeal.
So Max Rock and Roll, I wonder if it would be like, and they would never do this, obviously, but like, if it would be a successful magazine if every month it just went through the archives and reprinted like two, or like a really well-curated kind of like cross-section. Like, it almost was like a mojo of their own archives, but just of like hardcore and punk.
I think that would be great. The undertaking of doing that would probably be very difficult because I don't know really how they, you know, besides like the actually just thumbing through old issues, I don't know how they would go about that in a very quick manner, given the amount of duration.
It would be difficult, but I'd buy that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, that's the thing, like you and I had discussed about it is, you know, it really, regardless of wherever anyone falls on how much they read it presently, it really is an institution unto itself, which certainly shaped, you know, again, like you said earlier, like people like yourself or myself, it was a huge resource. Mm-hmm. So there's no debating that. And going in person, if you were privileged enough to do so, you saw it. You know what I mean? Like the library is by far the best punk library you will ever see. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Is. And, you know, it's daunting. So, yeah, So it's a sad day as far as it being in physical form, but nonetheless has come. I'm a little shocked to a degree, but I do think it's sort of the logical progression. And it still has its online manifestation, so that'll still be doing what it does.
Absolutely. Well, we now move on to ultimately much more tragic news, which is this week there was the passing that kind of came – I guess it has it been confirmed at this point? Because like I keep hearing that news has surfaced and stories are kind of emerging, but I guess pretty much confirmed at this point. There certainly hasn't been anything to refute it. And probably by the time you're hearing it, it's definitely confirmed. Lorna Doom has passed away at what I read was a very tragically young age of 50. An icon, like a real legend, someone that lived it, someone who I never got to meet, but by all accounts was 100% still approachable and cool as shit. Like just like a really great person from what I've heard. And so very sad to report her passing.
Yeah, for sure. And it, anytime that kind of happens, like there's been some pretty, you know, big deaths as of recent, you know, times. So it's always, I find that you just reflect when that happens. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I never really, I don't know. You don't realize the, I don't know. The germs are just so great. It's just hard to imagine being in that group, like that being a part of your legacy. So, but yeah, the thing I thought was interesting in some of the articles that have been around, and you're correct, there has not been any, there's no cause of death or whatever has been released or what have you. So I'm not sure where that's going to go in terms of if it's going to be reported or not. But as far as from close people close to, it seems to suggest that they are, you know, they like Don Bowles, it said that she had passed. So I'm assuming that's
legitimate. Yeah, it looks like it's pretty confirmed at this point.
Yeah. But what was going to say? I was amazed to read here that she was giving people germs burns too. Yeah. I thought that was always something that only people like you would request from
I never people got like Pat her. Smear. Yeah, she would give you? She would give them out still. Yeah. And mine actually comes from her. Like it's mine, like obviously comes from Darby. But Lorna got it from Darby, who gave it to Shane West, who gave it to Chris Shiflett, who gave it to me.
So that's how it works.
That's how
it works. Okay, I see what you mean. I thought it was like you had to meet one of them and that's how that happens.
No, it's vampire rules in life.
I see.
And so, yeah, like it's as long as you have one, you can give one and you have to get one from someone who has one. Because Darby wanted to become a cult that would spread around the world and kind of weirdly did.
Yeah. I thought you just – I had assumed you got yours from Pat Smear. That's where that story came from.
He refused. It was his cigarette. Sorry, he actually – no, Pat doesn't have one, but Pat gave the first one. Pat gave Darby his.
Ah, I see.
And that's how it worked. I'm trying to remember. But it was Pat's cigarette. So Pat's like, I only gave one ever, and that was to Darby. I'm like, well, I'm not going to argue with you on that one. I asked him for one every day, though. One time he brought me to a wine tasting and he's like, no, do you want to come to this wine tasting with me though? I was like, sure. And that was very interesting. It was a lot of fun. And then and then eventually Chris Shiflett heard, he's like, oh, I got a germs burn. And I'm like, oh yeah? And he's like, yeah, got it from Shane West. I was like, and he's like, but he got it from Lorna Doom. And I was like, oh. And then I asked for one.
Well, there you go.
I got one day I'll release that video. Sandy shot it all on video.
Wow. But the what little has been written so far in the news coming out is there was some people who've chimed in about that. I had not. I thought this was something that folks like you just requested of certain people. I didn't realize it was a sort of the phenomenon as it exists.
Yeah,
as you just explained.
It was it's a weird cult. It's a very weird cult. But yeah, Lorna is sadly passed on and leaves behind an amazing legacy of you know, obviously the Germs recordings, which, you know, Germs are the most essential band of all time. And she really kept that flame going, you know, and kept that story alive for a long time.
Yeah, agreed.
And so, yeah, rest in peace. And I guess that's it. There's no real way to kind of like move on except for awkwardly now into what is going to be happening on. I guess that's why we used to have the mailbag, eh? It was like a good buffer.
We still do, and we'll do it on occasion. Tonight is not ideal because of Damien's set up for tour and sort of the hectic week we've had, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get it. We'll get to it another time. But I guess we'll just dive into today's episode.
For sure.
On the show, Julian Baker, one of the, great songwriters of this era, who is legitimately one of the coolest, most chill people I've gotten to talk to for this podcast. And I had a real fun time talking to her. A totally different perspective than I have on this music, but someone who also has like a lot of common connection points with the type of music that I'm into as well. It was great to have her on the show. Finally impressed my cousin.
Why is that?
My cousin wrote and she was pretty excited.
Nice.
Yeah, she was pretty excited. A lot of people have hit me up that have never hit me up about another episode of this podcast.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I love doing this thing is because, like, where else could you go from Danger Aaron 1 week to Julian Baker the next week?
Yeah, true. Huh. You've, obviously it's your brother, but it's your, whoever it comes from, one of you deserves the credit.
Punk deserves the credit, Chris.
Okay, there we go.
Tristan deserves a little bit credit. He was the one who was like, who got me, who booked Julian Baker through, you know, her publicist and everything. So total credit to Tristan on that one. Danger Aaron was mine. And I think, but though Punk is the thing that we ultimately have to give credit for bringing these two people into the same universe.
Yeah, true. As described in the episode. Yeah, for sure.
You know? All right. Well, let's dive in, Chris.
Yeah. Where do you want to start?
I guess I want to start with this idea of, punk as like this thing that's ultimately kind of like a burden that you carry with you for the rest of your life, no matter what you do.
Yeah, I think we've sort of touched on aspects of that throughout when we discuss things on this program here, for sure. I think it's particularly interesting in the context that she raises in the episode with you, because I think it's interesting to hear from someone I wouldn't expect to have that dilemma speak of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I know you, so we talk about, you know, the zeitgeists that we always weigh heavy on us. And specifically, like, when you're in a band like you're in, you've had a trajectory over the last, whatever now, 15 years or some odd. So the decisions weigh on you as to how you should navigate that for Boy Genius and or her career. I see her as having a, you know, maybe similar conflicts or what have you, as you've had navigating that jump into sort of a professional career, quote unquote, and sort of the right way to navigate that. So I think that the punk thing is, yeah, that's a tricky, yeah, it's a tricky, whatever, cross to bear. I still don't know if I've reconciled it myself, and I don't have that dilemma really in my life at the present.
It's funny though, like how that is a constant thread that comes up on this show. And, you know, it might not even be like, you know, we used to describe it, I think, at some point as being that little Ian MacKaye that sits on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But this is like, but I think it's bigger than that, right? Like, because Craig Ferguson and Julian Baker, who there's got to be, what, like 30 some odd years of age between them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Maybe more. And here both of them are talking about the same sort of like idea that this is like, it's almost like an austerity kind of commitment, you know, like it's almost like you have to, you know, sign up to the fact that you ultimately feel that, you know, on some level, you have to, you know, you can't betray this. You know, like, this is a blood pact you're making for the rest of your life.
Well, yeah, I think there's a few factors I would say that designate that. I think one of them is that people who tend to get into this music get into it at a formative age. Shapes, you know, for better or worse, hopefully better, it shapes your worldview. So when you then navigate that later as you age, as we're learning, you know, it's there aren't things that are so black and white. So to navigate them in a way that is true to, quote unquote, you know, your ethics based on coming from communities like this, it's difficult to reconcile sometimes. How I view it.
No, go on.
No, that's it. Go.
No, I kind of feel that at this point it's like, you know, you get to a point in your life where you're kind of, I don't know, you wonder if this is, you know, like we, I guess we talked about in this episode, like, is this where the moral code kind of came from? You know, at a point, like, are we getting moral code from this, the music we're listening to, more than the people around us, or more than our families, more than our religions at this point? For punk people.
Yeah, it's... I think it's... This is really difficult because it's subjective. I think there's a lot of people that like this kind of music that don't seem to espouse any specific ethic.
But apart, even that ethic seems to come from this music on some level, right?
You know, for sure. Like, that nihilistic idea of it. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, that... You know, sort of like, it's kind of funny because there are these, you know, punk has very, very common tropes and people know them and people, you know, the reason why they exist. But the idea of taking something like, you know, the Sex Pistols and like No Future, you know, that idea is a whole segment of an aspect of people who are, you know, largely involved in this community, you know, largely spoken, you know, that's one of the ethics. It's maybe not the most healthy or productive ethic, but is nonetheless, you know, live fast, die young. You know, there's plenty of transgressive or self-destructive things you could turn to if you want to point at it that come out of this music. At the same time, you have, you know, the other elements as well, which I think are more discussed in the interview that you just had. I don't know. It's difficult, though, because it's... I do think you are correct, and I think a lot of the in the interview, it's kind of comes out with the two of you, and I think you've always stated that on this show. Arguably, it's, you know, a lot of the reason for this show existing is to illustrate that idea that it is there are aspects of this that are fundamental to the way people conduct themselves and what they end up doing, and therefore what that influences on culture in general, and how much that has impacted, you know, the greater, you know, dare I say, popular culture. And I think it has shifted greatly in the wake of, you know, movements such as this, so to speak.
I we've obviously had people that are religious on the show before, I'm sure, but like no one who's as open about their religion as Julian is. So give us a chance to kind of like really dive into this idea of like this thing ultimately becoming kind of like faith for people. Like it's, obviously, like, no matter what kind of music you're into, you know, you love that kind of music, you're passionate about that kind of music. But I don't know what other kinds of music require the level of faith in the genre as something as punk does.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting point you guys were touching on. I don't know. I feel like. Yeah, I think punk is quite unique in that way, I suppose, but I'm just trying to think of like, is it the same in metal or is it the same in rap music? I don't know. Maybe it isn't. Maybe you win there. I'm just thinking like that's kind of a ubiquitous thing amongst genres. It's like a very precious
element. Hip hop, you're right. Hip hop does like, you have to have like, especially at one point, there was like this idea, certainly, that was espoused in the music of like faith in hip hop, you know, and bringing hip hop back.
I think it is. I think what the things to parse amongst these sorts of things, especially just using metal or rap or whatever, I think the only difference is that punk generally isn't controlled by, although arguably there's a ton of first wave records, especially that were major records and therefore, you know, are part of the commercial machine, what have you. But the broad amount of this genre, I would argue, is controlled by not that, by more like independent or grassroots sort of motivations or people. So I think that's the difference. I'm not so sure if metal has that same thing or rap. So I think there's something to that. I'm not so sure at this moment in time exactly what that is, but so that's maybe where there's more of a fanaticism in punk, and maybe that the level of dedication is greater based on it being a little harder to certainly maybe before this era, it's certainly harder to be a part of or find out about because of the amount of work you had to do, because it wasn't a bigger thing and not controlled by any particular corporate entity, let's say. I don't know. It's sort of a tough thing. I don't know. What is your take on it?
I guess, like, I don't know. I kind of think like punk is something like, you know, off air, we just talked about this for the past, like, I don't know, 30 minutes before we went live, yeah, about the idea that there's like, you know, we've never even put it into these words, but just like sort of this idea that you like are beholden to this genre, right? By like a set of moral codes, like, thou will not sell out. Thou will be progressive or regressive, depending on your take on punk rock. Or like, you know, there's almost like these commandments that you have to follow.
I think the sellout one is not unique to punk, though. That's the one I would say, if you look at any genre, always is present.
You're right.
Metal certainly, like if you look at like a phrase like death to false metal, is exactly that kind of sentiment, right?
I guess there's not the commitment to austerity, though, in the same way, right? Because, like, you could be on, like, you know, like a major label.
Yes.
You could be making a lot of money, and as long as you're true to your music, no one's going to call you a sellout in metal, in the same way that, like, man, Tragedy could put out, like, the same record that they just put out, but if they were on, like, if they just woke up one day and were like, ah, fuck it, let's see what Sony's got to offer.
Like, yeah,
people would fucking freak.
Yes, I would imagine so. Correct. You're 100% correct. So I do think, though, that sort of, I don't know, whatever you want to say, that sentiment, though, is true in that sense, though, across the board. I think any genre that whatever the community that cares about it has that sort of like, what is real, what is not, therefore selling out is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. That's an understandable mm-hmm. sentiment. I think, like, though, you're correct where punk, again, is unique because there's sort of like that, whatever, like that economic driver where it cannot be, it's the source of that. But see, I've always found that an interesting one because, like, you know, and as a massive record collector and historian like yourself on this, like, there's a lot of those first wave, especially, records that are very much on majors.
Oh, definitely.
And even the more certain things, like, even I think, wasn't Rude Kid stuff on majors even, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so it's, and that, those are pretty edgy records. So it's not like, it's difficult to try and eliminate the idea that anything from a certain corporate angle is not to be considered or to be neglected, because there's so much that still applies. But yeah, for the most part, I think, I don't know if it's more our generation that has fully adopted that, like the one prior to us really kind of put it into force, if you look at something like the Discords or what have you. Mm-hmm. And then I think it, then the next wave is the one that carries on this, you know, no corporatization sort of idea, right?
Yeah, I think Crass too.
Well, like, there definitely has always been there. But I mean, though, when you look at, like, just the idea of what has been a major label punk record in the last 20 years. You know, I guess this is subjective because I don't know if someone wants to still consider something like Green Day in that category. Is that a different animal now? Who, you know, or like a Rant? I don't know.
Like, what defines a major label?
Exactly, right. And so because the music industry at large is a mess and major labels really aren't the same kind of anymore, especially in the last like 5 years.
Well, especially because everyone ultimately is on Spotify. And like,
yes. And so then there's that animal as well. Exactly. So it's a completely sort of irrelevant argument. I realize this, but it's also, it's just, how do you want to weigh it? You know what I mean? And I'm just weighing it on the grounds of, you know, like you're saying, tragedy. If you're looking at markers that indicate sort of the big moments in this music or this whatever you want to call it, if it's not just music, this broad movement, what are those indicators? And I would argue that there aren't many in recent years that have had anything to do with a corporate interest. Mm-hmm. The biggest ones, I'm arguing. You know, it's not to say that there aren't, you know, obviously something like, just to pull an example out of a hat, like, you know, no worries. Like you look at things like bands that were on Warped Tour, you know what I mean? The first eras of Warped Tour, you know, and all of them I'm sure had elements. But if you look at like the first lineups, there are groups on there that people don't have a beef with in that respect. You know what I mean? In terms of like being sellout bands or being like big bands. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the latter end of it, I think that is more of like the gripe, right? So there's – anyway, I don't know. It's we're sort of – you know, we're getting like a bit philosophical on this, I suppose. But
well, that's what this show's all about. But like I guess we should probably move on from this point because
it's going to be
debated
sure.
and yep. talked about all night.
Yeah, yeah.
Where do you want to go next?
Let me see here. There was something, because I'm a few days out from listening to it, I'm just trying to remember. There were some things I wanted to get to. I liked, first of all, I think it's very interesting the idea that I had never thought, speaking of a separate topic, the idea of, I'm trying to think of how to say it, someone of faith mm-hmm. getting into, you know, music, like what she's describing as the music she got into as her, gateway into punk, so to speak. I had never thought of that. She states it, you and her state it really interesting, where it's like, because sort of the assumption from the outside is always that, you even stated it in the interview, I believe, it's like that is a co-opting element.
Yeah, for a lot these of people are all missionaries and they're going to invade the scene and recruit.
Yes. And I certainly think there is an element of that, to be fair. But I had never considered, as a person not of faith, the idea that the inverse, meaning there are people of faith who are confined, you know, quote unquote, like conservatively within that faith, who then find the I don't know what you want to say, like the people, like what she's talking about getting into, how that broke her out of a very minimal absolutist perspective of that faith. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'd never thought of that idea of like people of faith, it's really hard to articulate. I'd never thought of the idea of someone of faith being influenced by other factors, people from that faith who do not adhere to the sort of the commonalities of it, meaning the more traditional, dare I say, what's the word I'm looking for, orthodox aspects of faith. And so there's that idea of, like, you know, faith-based music that is punk, arguably, or isn't, depending on your perspective. But those groups, I never thought of those groups as being, I thought of them as being gateways, but I never thought of them as being gateways in the sense that they were a haven for people who are stuck in situations like she's describing, mm-hmm. like these sort of like, you know, I don't know, like the people who do not have a lot of like culturally rich things to attach to, and therefore they do not feel they have an exit, or they don't feel they have an outlet to, you know, do something that's worthwhile or that isn't more or less just the norm or just the status quo. I never thought of that before. I had never considered it because it's outside of my completely worldview and perspective. But I thought that was a really interesting angle. I would not have considered that.
I think it's like also the idea of using it as an escape hatch, right?
Well, like, exactly. Yeah.
Like to other cultural areas of interest, but you're like going to use this. And then it's almost like, well, there's almost like this kind of awesome thing about, you know, all these types of bands playing together. And this then being like, you know, like when Alexis on Fire on those tours that, you know, you'd be on,
yep.
you'd be playing with these bands that would be on Tooth and Nail.
Yep.
And it's like, well, like, you know, for some of these kids, like as much as like there's a sort of like, are they going to is this sort of recruitment invasion of the scene? But like at the same time, it's also like, oh, all these kids are going to have a chance to see all these bands that come from a different perspective, you know? And like there's this idea like, I don't know, like in the 90s, being anti-religion was like the thing, you know, for hardcore. And now I'm just kind of like more at a stage in my life, like where it's just like, let people live however the fuck they want. I'm like, if people want to do what they want to do, like who am I to judge them? Like, as long as they're not hurting, like it sounds ridiculous to say this, but like at the same time, it's like, it was so dogmatic and it just seems so ridiculous to be just as, you know, tyrannical with your beliefs of anti-beliefs as people would be. You're fearful of people with beliefs being.
Yeah, that's well stated. I agree. What I would say from experience of like what you're describing, like I have, you know, rubbed shoulders or elbows, whatever the saying is, with some of the things that she's describing in the interview, like groups that influenced her. I think what you learn is, as someone who's a fairly cynical human being myself, I still never found I had a great problem with any of these people, even though they came from a different persuasion than myself. Mm-hmm. And this is dealing with them just on human, regular day-to-day human levels, right? Like, nothing of the ordinary. Now, taste-wise, it's a whole other debate. That's not my thing. But yeah, I think it's correct. I think that's more of an older person's take on it, if I'm being fair. That you just progress and you kind of just think, well, who really cares or whatever about, you know, decent people are decent people, whatever persuasion they are. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sort of my attitude in life. But yeah, I you're correct with the fact that dogmatism is bad coming from whatever angle it is. So if it's of the mentality of you know, an abolitionist mentality, then it's, to me, it's equally as problematic. So I have never ever, yeah, that's the way I see it. I think you're 100% accurate. I think you summarized that perfectly. I think you and I come, people like us, come from a very specific era of underground punk and hardcore music, and we are saddled with the burdens of a lot of that era. And I don't think that has gone away. And I'm just starting now to kind of realize it probably won't. like we're of the age now where I'm like, if this has not gone away yet, this is not going to go away, I don't think. So I sort of laugh about things now, but yeah, it had a tremendous impact, and therefore it's always some good or bad. So there are things that I kind of have PTSD about in like hindsight. And a lot of it is this sort of like unreasonable parsing of people's lifestyles or belief systems. It doesn't really, when they don't affect me, my attitude is just, I really don't, you know, I don't really think it's important. So that's, but I think you summarized it well. I'm just ranting for no reason now.
Well, yeah, like I think, you know, you can be, you know, a person who's not religious, you know, but like the idea at the time was to be anti-religion.
And it was, yeah, like, but I also think that has changed though.
Oh, like, I think that's changed too. Yeah, definitely.
I don't think that it's, I think that idea still exists, of course, and there's still understandably expression of that in this music, 100%. I think that there is a cultural shift that has changed that has made a lot of people reassess the way they want to discuss that. because I think for a lot of people like you and I, we were experiencing it from, and I guess from the, more or less from the 80s forward, you, if you're using like punk tropes, you're using tropes like, you know, jocks are the burden. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time you're thinking like Reagan era hardcore. So you're thinking of like conservative white America and overburdened, overbearing Christianity. And those are the pervasive tropes in punk, and they last until whatever, arguably maybe they still last, but they certainly last thematically, vividly up until say George Bush well, the second, I guess you would say, or junior, see, mm-hmm. junior. Mm-hmm. That's sort of a pervasive attitude, right? And I think in the last, whatever, I guess 10 or so years, I think things have changed a little where there aren't as much black and white debates about that in this music anymore, because there has been cultural shifts that are make the argument a little more gray, mm-hmm. in the fact that there are people of faith that are not of that persuasion that used to be that trope. So, and it doesn't affect often like people like you or me. So how are we going to write? You know, it's just a different landscape. I think if you take a band like, I believe I'm saying the name correctly, like Haram, you know, that I don't know if they're a band of faith or if the people involved in that are a band of faith, but that's not, or even if you take someone like the Bad Brains, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there were, I believe, as far as I know, anti-Rasta songs written, I would imagine.
Oh, isn't there one by... Yeah, there's definitely anti...
I can't reference them off the top of my head, because the reverence for Bad Brains is so great, largely, that you don't see that same... Like, for example, if Bad Brains had been a fanatical Christian group, right? But they were still so unbelievably sick. So, which just, for whatever reason, didn't happen. But let's say that were to happen. You know, what would have changed, you know, as far as the perspective on that, right? That's what I'm trying to parse here. Like this idea of, for whatever reason, the targets were always, you know, sort of the more pervasive, like sort of directly oppressive things to the kind of largely suburban, you know, people that were making the music that we like so much at the time. And I think that's carried forward. I think that's completely changed now. So I don't think that same attitude on, you know, things of faith or is the same anymore. I really don't.
Yeah. Like, and I think, you know, Trouble was, you know, by many accounts, like a pretty religious Christian band, right? Or some, at least some of the members were.
The metal group you're talking?
Yeah.
And from what I understand. Yeah.
But like, yeah, there was like, it's something where you still hear the guys that weren't Christian denying it to this day. Like, being like, oh, it wasn't the whole band. And stuff. So yeah, like it's interesting to kind of like look at the changing attitudes towards people that have beliefs, you know, that like, you know, that because like I think ultimately at the end of the day, you know, everyone has that thing in their life, that longing, that need for something bigger than themselves. And like, you can fill that anyway. You know, with me, it's filled with overpriced records and pro wrestlers and, you know, and not to undermine like how important faith is to people, but at the same time, like, my God, was I fanatical for this music? Like,
yes, I think though that
fanatical at a time.
I don't think that will ever change though. You know what I mean? And not that I think you do either, but like, I think that is good and important, as sad as it is, like to some people, I think that is something that was the case. I feel exactly the same way as you. Like and maybe arguably I'm still invested to that degree. But it's for sure. Like I think these, you can, you know, your focus can be, consumed by whatever, you know, you so choose. But yeah, for, I don't know, people like us, dare I say, like, yeah, that was it. Right. And I think that the era of which we came apart, which, you know, was influenced by the sort of golden era largely, that was the, you know, that this was the way it was and is arguably still. So I don't know, like it's a difficult thing to parse. I understand people having differences of obviously political opinions or faith-based differences or whatever. I just, my attitude about it is I don't know how much any of it really matters in terms of like the fact that we need to just kind of like get along, you know, so to speak. I don't know.
Well, it's like, and it's like, you know, not, and then people will be like, oh, you're overstating it. But like, if someone stopped being, you know, someone's friend because they believed in a different religion, you would say that person's intolerant, right?
I would think, yes.
I don't know about you, Chris, but I definitely stopped being friends with people at different times of my life because they weren't into this music. Like not like just because of that, but because like,
yeah, I get it.
They weren't coming with me on the journey. So it was like, okay, well, see you later.
Well, it's the different version of the Charles Bronson song that you were so affected by, right?
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so like
you're saying, blame Mark McCoy.
No, not at all.
That's what I'm saying.
I think, but if I think about people who have shifted, whatever you want to say, the zeitgeist at points, he's certainly an individual that has.
Oh, yeah,
or a part of the collective that did. You know what I mean? So I think there are always these sorts of people that do. I don't think there have been many in punk anyway. And maybe because arguably the punk ethos is opposed community-wise largely to this. But I can't think of that many faith-based people in punk that have been those sort of purveyors of that. Again, arguably some like the Bad Brains, maybe. Or yeah. Arguably the Krishna element, if you want to discuss some other things.
Even today.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? So, but yeah, exactly, right? That's exactly what that was the under the umbrella of the Krishna thing.
Yeah.
So it's a funny thing because there has always been these flirtations.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that are accepted and have always been because of some of the work that people involved with this have done, usually in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So there are definitely passes that are made, or concessions that are made based on, well, you know, like the common thing in the 90s was definitely that, you know, Shelter was not, at least amongst people I knew, was like Shelter was kind of the no-no, but you're never going to give up on Youth of Today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's still, you know, I like Shelter just fine, but it's, you know, Youth of Today is my thing. That's like, that one's not going away. Shelter, I could probably not have any of those records and be okay with it. But you know what I mean? So, and that's not throwing shade at faith. It's just like, I just like the Youth of Today records more.
What about Baby Gopal?
Well said. That's for the show followers. That's your drinking game, folks. Yeah,
you probably drink as much as Chris does if you're playing that game. We haven't mentioned Baby Gopal in a long time.
Fair enough. Hey, On Pink, still an essential.
Yeah, definitely. We still need that. We still need that in the archives, the Baby Gopal On Pink record.
Yeah.
If someone could buy it and send it to us, we would be much obliged.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, like, we definitely have had this discussion before on the show, but about all the, like, kind of classic Christian punk bands.
Yeah.
Choir Boys.
I don't know Altar Choir Boys. Altar Boys. Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Saviors.
That one I don't know.
That band is amazing. Amazing. They have an LP called US Kids.
Okay.
But then they also have like some like old, like, and I don't think that LP is on Discogs. I think
you don't think it is?
No, I think it's like, I don't know. Like I'm on the resource trying to call it up right now.
Yeah.
But they had a couple different releases.
Is it URS or ORS?
I'm trying to remember now.
Another thing to discuss is, and this is definitely like very Killed by Death-y, but didn't Death turn into like a religious group basically, like the Detroit Death?
Yeah, we played with them one time. And
but they thought they changed their name, didn't they, or whatever, when they went?
Yeah, and then but they were like back to playing like they were playing Death songs, but they were still in like the other outfits, and I think they were calling themselves Death again. But yeah, they apparently became like a religious group afterwards.
Yeah. So there's always been these, again, like I said, like flirtations with aspects of this. And there's always been people that have not accepted it also, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But, and I just find it's a weird and interesting topic because I do think it sort of has been discussed, but it's sort of this weird, I don't know if it's taboo to discuss or something. That's why it doesn't get touched on more, but it's, yeah. I also think there's a lot to be said in the interview when you're speaking about it and she talks about sort of where she's from and just the idea of the just the cultural impact of that. Mm-hmm. So that you're sort of when you're of, you know, some of those regional areas she's speaking of. Now, this is not to speak for everybody, but I've experienced it where that it does seem to be hugely pervasive to the degree where you just you're sort of it, even if you're not, you know, a card carrying, whatever you want to identify as, like faith based wise. When she's talking about the groups that did the circuits that she's discussing and the groups that she was getting into that are like these aggressive, screamy bands that are either outright religious or connected. I, you know, again, in that touring, those years, I was touring sort of amongst that.
And yeah, I wonder if she saw Alex on Fire.
And she may have, but it's I experienced that from an outsider and someone who's not of that persuasion. It was sort of eye-opening to go to some of these places and just see that it was sort of culturally pervasive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that might be an overstatement and whatever, because I'm not from there. I'm sure there's people from there. Maybe if you're listening, they're not in agreement because they're like, well, I'm here. That's not my thing, perhaps. But like it's certainly more than where we are at, you and I, regionally. And it's very noticeable. And so I do think there is something that to be said for what she kind of states in the interview, that there is a cultural whatever element to that is perhaps the bigger driver of it than just simply the faith itself, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? This is like far more. Anyway, go on with your.
I was going to say, actually, I found out the name of that band.
Mm, what's that?
It's Life Savers. Saver.
Life Savers.
Saviors.
Life Saviors. Okay. Savers. That one I don't know. Like, what era are we talking here?
81.
Oh, wow. So that is early. Okay.
They had another name, LS Underground, was their other name. And it looks like they went on until like the year 2016.
Okay.
No, that was like a record from 1994. They got put out in that, but they're like, seem like they were like still putting out records into the 2000s. And Live at Cornerstone, they put out a record. So they must be huge in this world, but their first album, which is Us Kids, not US Kids, is fucking incredible.
Well, I think like you just hit the nail on the head too, is that there is the huge in that world. There also is a whole other, exactly. That's a whole other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was something that I had never, thought about until you experienced some, and you're like, man, some of these bands are huge.
Yeah.
Like you don't really think, so yes, I just found this record you're speaking of. It's all one word.
Yeah.
And, it is on the label Swing Records from 81. Yeah. Wow. Style new wave / punk. I've not heard this LP, but I am curious to, because as you know, I'm a major fan of that first Altar Boys record.
I want to get the single too. The single's fantastic. The single you can hear on YouTube.
Yeah.
But it's never been sold on the machine, on the resource.
Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit single you're talking about, yeah, from 82. Nice. Yeah. I've never heard this. I got to hear it.
The LP's fantastic.
They got a good look on this single. That's cool.
Yeah, the single looks badass, man. That single looks.
Yeah.
Man, I would love to find a copy of that thing.
4 have, 49 want, as we've discussed on this show.
Yeah, not good ratios.
That's that metric. What that means for anybody, it's bad news.
Bad news. Bad news. It means you're not going to get that record cheap.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're trying to state.
Also, I like. One thing that I thought was awesome, like obviously I knew she was going to be a fan of this music from the interviews I'd read with her and seen with her. But like just the kind of fan she is, like someone who's gone back and like dug deep on all the stuff that they love. Like that's like that like, you know, kind of linear thing that I think you see in a bunch of people that have been on this show, you and myself included, where it's almost like that need to try and connect all these dots.
Well, I think you're the best example that I've ever met in my life, but yeah.
Well, I'm just very good at it. I'm just obsessed with it, but I think like all of us have, you know, if you're a certain type of fan of the genre, obviously, but like, you know, the need to kind of like try and like see how this all fits together and see how these bands and like, you know, trying to discover the breadth of this thing.
Yeah, I think for me, I think when you get into this sort of stuff, the way you keep hopping to the next thing is by some sort of commonality. And often it's a label or a band or members or, you know, and then it just snowballs into this, you know, what you and I become. Yeah, so I 100% agree. That's how I don't even think I'm cognitive of it anymore, like to the point I do it like all the time, that kind of stuff. Like I would be more than happy being on the resource, you know, for 8 hours a day, yeah, just in a deep job. In a deep trance and like
just clicking.
Exactly. So yeah, I also think it's important. I think the one, there's many luxuries, but the one major luxury for people like you and I with regards to something like the resource or just the way information is now is it's much easier to kind of do it, you know, and sort of really, I don't know, it scratches that nerdy itch very well these days when you want to parse something or look up, you know, whatever nuance of who did this and who did that or who produced. Like you can look up very, very nuanced things fairly easily. Mm-hmm. And for people like you and I, that's, I don't know, very important.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think like that's the fun part is like when you start getting into like all the weird, you know, like that's like when you're talking about, you know, obviously Pez for her is like a different band because it's a local band, but like,
yeah, yeah.
When you finally get to talk about this band that you've been buying fucking 7 inches of for years, you know, and then you can meet someone and they're just as excited to talk about it as you are. It's like, man, that's what this thing is so awesome.
Yeah, that was a great part of the interview. I thought her freak out about that was excellent.
I was definitely pretty excited. I imagine once again, like it would probably be for me, like someone being like, holy fuck, you know, Five Knuckle Chuckle.
Exactly. Which again, for those religious followers of the show, quote unquote, fanatical followers, I should say, Damien just also mentioned the other drinking game band. So,
well, Corey's a past guest.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe we'll get someone from Baby Gobble on one day.
Yeah, shout out to David Up. That's who I'm trying to shout out.
I just got to, you know, like once again, clicking on the resource, which is you know, always fun to do. I clicked on this guy, Chris Wimber, who played in the Life Saviors.
Yeah.
And left the band. And he eventually changed his name, at least as a credit, for Chris MC White Hope Wimber.
Whoa.
Yeah. He played on a hip hop record.
Okay.
Oh, he's just a producer.
Okay.
On the song Heaven Sent.
I see. Yeah. I think the other way to discuss this is I don't know enough about it, but I feel like there's a decline of Western civilization to kind of vibe to the generation of lifesavers sort of thing.
No, and this is still Christian stuff.
What's that?
I was hoping that I'd find someone in the band who like fell off, you know, and went like decline of Western civilization part two.
Yeah, I know. I mean, like the idea of when you look at one versus two, you see sort of the tragic offspring of the first thing, and it's more tragic and or embarrassing. And I think that's what I mean to say is like the things that like what you're just like everything you just said about where that person ended up sounds pretty terrible. All due respect.
I want to hear this. Like they've got a record that's like a post-punk record here. Called Huntington Beach. The cover looks pretty terrible. Pretty terrible. But like the songs on it sound awesome. There's like it seems like it's like a real anti-cop record.
Really?
Yeah, like listen to the song titles. This record came out in 1995. They got a song Huntington Beach Police, Mrs. King, Rent-A-Cop is another song. They also have a song, The Day Elvis Died, and a song, Joey Ramone.
And this is the same group.
Same group, dude.
Yeah, the cover does look a little rough. The
cover looks terrible. Terrible. I wonder if they never got bad. Like, I wonder if this is, like, the teenage head of the Christian punk world, like where they're just like kept like, yeah, granted it sounds a little different, but like they kept finding their sound.
Well, I'm looking here. Something came up in under the recommendations here. I just want to see. Oh, okay. So one of their members, did you just say you looked up Michael Knott? No, you didn't. Anyway, under the recommendations, Michael Knott came up and I'm like, yo, I've heard of that. But yeah, Michael Knott became a bigger, in this world, released records on Tooth and Nail and whatnot. But was like the, you know, that sort of, I don't know, maybe not an Elliott Smith, maybe like a Sufjan Stevens or something of this
like,
world.
Like outlaw country vibes?
Not, no, like again, like a Sufjan Stevens or like a, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, like look at the photo of him. He's got like a DA cut and he's holding like a fucking gun.
I don't know now, but I know like up till, oh yeah, that's crazy. That I'm seeing it now. Yeah. Anyway.
I wonder if people do drugs at Cornerstone.
I'm not sure, but I think this gentleman has had a checkered past with that sort of stuff from what I remember. I did not know he was in the Lifesavers. Oh, that, okay. That's interesting.
Maybe he was in like a later lineup.
No, he's on that record. Founder. He's on the first single. Yeah. So this gentleman's background is the people I've encountered in, like who are deep into this. For example, the person I heard of the first Altar Boys record from.
Yeah.
Was massively into this gentleman, and now this makes me want to check this out because I'm like, okay, I see the links now as we were discussing earlier.
Damn, he put out secular records too.
Yeah, exactly.
The Aunt Betty's.
Yep. So anyway, I'm sure there's people.
It stands for Aunt Betty Ford's.
Huh. Yeah. So there's people out there, you know, perhaps that know more about this than you and I that are probably like, whatever. Feel free to write in if you have any info.
Yeah, break it down for us.
Yeah, to turnoutpunkfootnotes@gmail.com. But yeah, that's
also filling us. Do people do drugs at Cornerstone?
Damien's curious.
I'm curious about that.
Also, how different is Cornerstone from the Gathering of the Juggalos? I'm curious. Continue.
I'm sure it's like that. I could not imagine two more different places to be at.
I suppose, yeah.
I wonder if there's like an ICP of Christian Cornerstone music.
No, I don't know. These are all great questions.
But mind you, ICP, though, is a half Christian band. Right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
There's a whole like subsect of Juggalos that have the black cross.
I don't know. Chris. Sure. Okay. Right. I'll take
your
word.
Have we talked about homies yet today?
Well, there we go. We got the other one in. There's the other turned up. There's the other one.
Now, bro him. That's the fourth.
Oh, there we go. You're checking them all off.
I got all my hits today. Yeah, this band, I got to check out all these records by this band.
Well, I'm curious now because I think I'm guessing based on this revelation that I've recently came across, I'm betting this Us Kids is a pretty sick record because I feel like
so sick. Yeah.
Anyway, I say this in a very, specifically sort of killed by death way of my intrigue with some of this sort of stuff.
You know, anyone can get this guy on the show too. Anyone knows him out there. If you're listening to this right now and you're like, motherfuckers, this guy's famous. I know this dude. Please get in touch because, oh, whoa, this is wild, Chris. Mm-hmm. So click on that guy, Kevin Annis.
From the Lifesavers?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He's the brother of Mike Annis, who is better known as Altar Boys founder, Mike Stand.
There we go. Dude, this has just made a whole lot more sense. So yeah, I definitely, there's no doubt I have to hear this LP.
Yeah. Yeah. This is...
I'll be so bummed. If this is better, I'm going to be so bummed that I came to this late. Because that first Altar Boys is unreal.
I'm not going to say it's got to be, but it's like 3 years earlier than that first.
It is, I know, which speaks to like.
Yeah.
I've still never heard the second. Well, there's many, but the one after the first, When You're a Rebel, which is like the best ADZ name and should have been like the name for, you know, like a Vile Tones LP that never happened or something. But anyway, yeah.
yeah, no, I got to try and like track down some more of these records. There's also, I just clicked on Deliverance, which is the first Christian thrash speed metal band in CCM history, which later shifted towards progressive metal.
Where are you seeing that from?
I don't if you click on Kevin Lee, which I think is just an alias for Kevin Ennis.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it says he's ex-members of this band Deliverance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Records called What a Joke on Intense Records from 91.
Damn. Huh. This thing looks sick.
Yeah, that cover is fucking hilarious.
Looks a little sketchy, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know.
Came out in Europe.
It got reissued in 2011.
Wow. It's like it's actually like a sought-after little record.
Well, I think some of the stuff... This is only on CD, though, this one.
No, this is an LP.
Well, I don't... The one I'm looking at from 91 is Thing, but okay, there's an early one.
If you... yeah.
Oh,
you
there's one from 82 before. Okay.
Yeah. So, man, we're learning so much tonight.
Well, I have an intrigue with some of this stuff for sure, but it's more so on the back of like the fact that the Ultra Boys LP is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my pearls of wisdom on this.
That's your piece and you're sticking to it.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else we should talk about today?
Oh, probably, but I can't think. Well, I don't know. Do you want to talk about 15 or something like that?
I was going to say we should talk about 15.
Yeah. So this is a group I've never really gotten into all that much. So you'll have to pontificate more
like
than
me. Like at all, Chris? At all?
No, never really got... Like I'm aware of it, but I've never... No, I can't tell you if I've ever listened to a full 15 record.
I'm glad we got to this topic because it brings up something I wanted to bring off the top, which I was kind of like, yeah, should we bring it up? What are your least favorite or what are the favorite or what are some of the most notable? Because 15 has a song that's their anti-Maxim rock and roll song. But what are some of the other notable anti-Maxim rock and roll songs from pop punk? And these are bands that were probably slag too. But 15 is, they've got a song, I think it's called MRR.
I don't know. Offhand, I can't remember.
I'm trying to remember the name of the song now, probably 15. Maxim rock and roll. Got the chorus in my head.
okay, but anyway.
Song, I'm Telling Tim by NoFX.
Okay, yeah, sorry. But
MRR, that's the name of the song.
I never took I'm Telling Tim, I never took as like a you know what I mean? Like, I get it's clever enough. I never took that as like a...
That's why they aren't necessarily diss songs, I guess. Just yeah. Like, you know, but like Max Rock and Roll, songs about Max Rock and Roll. But yeah, no, like 15 is definitely a band that, you know, you fell in love with as a kid. I think I got into them through Green Day. Green Day covers them.
Okay.
They do Swain's first on... I'm trying to remember what song they do. On one of the Green Day live records, I think they covered 15. And that's how we got into them. Of course, is the post Crimp Shrine band featuring Jeff Odd and Jack from Crimp Shrine in the early lineup. And there's been a bunch of people over the years that have joined. They put out several records, jumped around to different labels, including Grass Records at one point.
Yeah, so what the one thing I was most curious about as someone who doesn't really know much about this group, you two were describing them as breaking up essentially because they became successful or didn't want to be or what have you.
Yeah.
What, parse that, like what's that about? What do you...
There's this whole record, I think it's on, there's a No Place Like Home that they kind of like put that out as their final record. And the whole thing was they were going to like not play anymore because he's like, being in a band just destroys the earth. And yeah, like I don't want to do this anymore. And there's actually like a show of their, there's an LP, sorry, of their last show.
Mm.
I think it's Allegra, I think is the record.
There's an LP, there's a, or if, well, there's a Live at Gilman one too that came out posthumously, but.
Oh, yeah, maybe it's the Livy Gilman ones.
No, no, but there is Allegra is from 96. This is 2LP. It doesn't seem like
Allegra.
It's
Allegra. No, they must have broken up after Allegra.
No, you're right. Recorded live to Dad at Gilman, the last show.
I think they did the surprise record.
Okay.
And then maybe broke up after that.
Either way, though, so they essentially they had this sort of the still like the whatever the Crimshrine kind of ethos or like the
yeah
that was like the okay I get what you mean because I always heard the name I always confuse them with there's like a stoner group that has like a one word name
16?
Like
16
might be 16 even
16 is fucking incredible
yeah there's so
also
that's
also 13 which is yeah. Like the kind of like. I think it was like Mike from I Hate God's wife's band, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was something like that, but I was confused that. So, no, 15 I definitely never got into, but I never really got into Crimshrine either. Like, again, I'm aware of these things, but I couldn't tell you much about their records.
A great band.
Cool.
Great, great band. So I'm just trying to find out if they did break up or if I'm completely talking my ass on them breaking up. Yeah, the group reformed. Okay, good. They did break up. Okay, good.
15 reformed?
Yeah. Yeah. It said the band broke up after that surprise record and then reformed in 1997.
Hmm. So, interesting.
But yeah, they're and then they broke up again in the year 2000.
Yeah, it's their last whatever studio album seems to be from 2000.
Yeah. All right. But that is that. Anything else you want to talk about today?
No, I think we're good. I wish you luck on your upcoming tour, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah, if you're in Europe and so inclined, come and see Fucked Up. We are going to be playing some shows for the next couple weeks. It's going to make footnotes a little bit difficult. So we will come back and do footnotes again when I get back.
For sure.
And I think there'll be some interesting episodes for us to talk about, Chris.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Anyway, that is it for this week on the show. Tony Molina, the architect of one of my favorite records of last year, and I think a record that you became a fan of recently as well, Chris.
Yeah, for sure. I was really impressed by that record. I highly recommend it.
He will be the guest on next week's show, and it's a really fun conversation with a really cool, badass musician, as we love to have on this show. And we like to have conversations with people that aren't musicians, too. But, you know, we especially love musicians. So thank you again to Julian Baker for being so fucking rad. And, yeah, that is it. Go out there and make your own culture. Sign your organ donor cards and come and see Fucked Up on tour if you're in parts of Europe. Next week. A lot of specifics for that request, but you know, and a baby Gopalon Pink would be nice too.